What's going on, world? It is your boy Luke Domas checking in on February 1st, 2019. Happy Friday to you all. Episode 16 of the Iconic Podcast. We're dropping it today. Quickly after a phone call last night, Bo and I just had to get on the proverbial mic after the craziness that ensued on social media and also in the world of sports. Harper sits down with the Padres brass last night for dinner in Las Vegas. Bo gives us some insight on whether that's truly going to happen, the odds of it happening, and whether it's a good fit or not. We also talk about, you know, are the Padres ready to compete right now? They got that young core, they got the best farm system in baseball, but is going after the former NL MVP the right move, or do they continue to develop the core? So we get into that. We also get into the Mizzou sanctions. Unfortunately, the NCAA dropped the hammer, a little too harsh of a hammer, if you ask me. We get into that on Mizzou athletics and the Mizzou athletic department because of the tutor fraud that was happening, the academic fraud that was happening. We get into all the logistics of that. It's a very spirited conversation, that segment of the show. And lastly, of course, Bo and I had to talk about the NBA. Porzingis, in a matter of 15 minutes, gets traded to the Dallas Mavericks, and he'll be joining forces with his European brethren, Luka Doncic. I love it. I love the move by the Dallas Mavericks front office. They've been aggressive in free agency. They've been aggressive through the draft, obviously trading up for Doncic. They deserve that two-man game in Dallas for the next 15 years. As for the Knicks, we talk about whether that cap space is really going to be used in the right fashion, if the odds of them actually getting KD and Kyrie and possibly AD, who knows. But all that and more on episode 16. Follow the Instagram at Iconic Clothing Co. You can buy our merch on the website as well. Just follow the link in that bio. 2019 is going to be a good year of content. We got something different up our sleeves here, probably in the next month or so. A project that I'm really excited about, and also, you know, Hags has got stuff up his sleeve. All right, without further ado, episode 16. Hit it.
On the bump in Columbia, Missouri. He extended himself heading into the sixth, seventh, later part of the game, and he finds himself in a little bit of a jam here. It was a big sports day, huge sports day. So what do you have to do? Coach makes the call to the pen. He's looking to the catcher. He goes, "All right, we need the kid. Uncle Luke, you're the kid, buddy. We needed to talk today. It was too big of a day. The Iconic Podcast had to speak."
Especially everything unfolded, I feel like, within 3 hours, you know, from like noon to 3 o'clock today. I got no work done. You know, hopefully bosses aren't listening to this, but I got zero work done. I was on Twitter scrolling. I was getting notifications from Waj and Shams all day. Dave Matter and Gabe DeArmond were all over Twitter today. I mean, good Lord, Bo. What a wild Thursday afternoon.
It wasn't even that it was wild, because, you know, sports days happen crazy. What was so miraculous about today's sports news was that it felt like it tied home so well in, like, four different sports categories.
Yeah, I would agree. I would definitely agree. I think things were going on across the entire spectrum for sure.
So let's, you know, now we're trying to get this out early. That's why we're recording this over the phone. We want to get this thing out early tomorrow, because we've got, you know, 3-4 tidbits of news here that need to be discussed.
Yeah.
I'm thinking,
where do you want to start, Paul?
Listen. I've been doing a little bit of work here over on the side for a website called West Coast Bias. I was asked to write blog for them, and I'm covering the Padres and the Lakers.
Right.
The Padres, well, they've had one hell of a week here. okay? Last week, they announced that in 2020, they're going to be returning back to the mustard and mud jerseys of the 70s.
How does that make
that sense? That alone excites me. That is, oh, wow. That'll rev the engine, as some might say. The mustard and brown, like, it is such a beautiful jersey. They've been wearing them on Friday nights over the last couple of years. The fans have wanted it for so long. And
wasn't it the All-Star game when it was there? Were those the uniforms?
It was. So in 2016, when they had the Home Run Derby and All-Star game, which I was able to go to the Home Run Derby, they did feature the mustard and mud jerseys. And it was really cool to see, actually. That's the year Stanton won the Derby.
Right.
So fans have been wanting this for so long, and ownership has been so reluctant to make it happen. But finally, they're going to cave in.
Then, it's tough to sell brown and mustard, but apparently to the San Diegans, that is as good as it gets.
It's honestly, I think it's just like part of our identity more than anything else. Like, yeah, I get it's not as sexy as maybe the Miami Vice Heat jerseys, but they I think people are able to reside with them very strongly. And I don't know, since the Chargers have left, you know, it's kind of like, you know, fuck blue a little bit. So
sure, yeah, that baby blue.
They're just trying to like secure that identity. So the last week they announced the mustard and mud are returning. Then a few days later, it gets reported that the Padres are the mystery team in the hunt for Manny Machado.
Mm.
Oh, so they're changing jerseys, what the fans want. Oh, and now they're in the mix for a big free agent? Like, is this too good to be true? Because it kind of feels like it is. You fast forward to today, and I'm in my sociology 45-45 class, and I get word that the Padres have a meeting with Bryce Harper tomorrow morning in Las Vegas.
Is it tonight?
I thought I was under the impression that it's tomorrow morning.
You would know more than me. What were you gonna ask? Go ahead, Bo.
You know, usually they say when it seems too good to be true, it is. Mm-hmm. And everyone is so hesitant in San Diego. I'm curious from an outsider's perspective, like, am I getting my hopes up? And I'm not saying that they're gonna necessarily sign these guys. I'm personally just happy that they're in the mix. They're interested. They're intrigued. They're involved. They're, like,
right,
partaking in these discussions. But as an outsider fan, I want to know, is that a bad mindset? Is that how the Padres are the Padres? Is because we're just happy to be even having these discussions?
Well, so you got to look at it this way. What if, you know, they're getting these meetings, there's obviously intrigue from obviously the Padres are trying to upgrade their roster at any point, but also – Manny Machado and Bryce Harper both said yes to these offers. You know, come in, we're going to lay out what we have in store for the next couple of years. We're going to offer you guys some money, and we'll see how it goes. So, you know, I'm sure you've noticed the trend in baseball now, and especially in free agency, is that these guys aren't getting paid right away. Like you would see in the NFL on the first day of free agency, that you know you would see July 1st. In the NBA free agency, like, guys are already making their moves. In baseball, it's completely different. It's been dead. We're 25 days away from spring training, and two of the biggest baseball talents in the game haven't been signed to teams yet. Like, that's wild. So you have to look at that perspective. This that sort of helped, like, that bodes well for the San Diego Padres. Maybe if you know, teams were lining up to pay these guys, the Padres may, you know, they could try and get in the mix, but it's hard to compete with the Yankees. Look at who they're competing with. Washington, which for Harper, which, I mean, if he wanted to stay in Washington, he would have said it 12 months ago. They would have already signed the deal, done and dusted. So I have a hard time believing he's going back to Washington. Philadelphia, I feel like, you know, he might join up with our buddy Reese. You don't know that, but I feel like Philadelphia is just kind of just saying, we got a blank check. We're trying to win. We've been non-existent for years. And then you have the White Sox, who are kind of offering the same thing that the Padres are offering. We have young talent coming through the minors. You know, we have a willingness to spend money. But think about it from Bryce Harper's perspective. I know there's Manny Machado's in the mix too, but if you ask me personally, I think they have a better shot at Harper than Machado, and here's why. Bryce Harper's a Vegas kid. What's the drive from Vegas to San Diego?
Yeah, I mean, you could do 4.5, 5 hours pretty comfortably.
Pretty comfortably. Vegas and in San Diego, those are both similar climates. Warm year-round. And I was talking to my dad about this the other day, and he's like, why would he go to San Diego? I'm like, well, it's 75 and sunny, you know, 365 days a year. He goes, but, yeah, when you're playing baseball in the summer, that's not really your first thought. I'm like, okay. But regardless, living in San Diego, being a San Diegoan, has to intrigue Bryce Harper because it's so close to where he grew up. So you have
Uncle Luke, can I add this? Can I add something
yeah.
to what you're saying?
Yeah.
Little did you know, funny enough, you want to guess where Bryce Harper spends his off seasons?
Shut up.
Do you want to know where Bryce Harper got married? You want to know where Bryce Harper's wife lives? He's a San Diego guy, bro. He is a San Diego guy. He got married there. He lives there in the off season. His wife loves it there. And, I mean, like, we always talk about how these athletes are real people, too. Well, real people, too, care about where their wife wants to live.
Oh, absolutely. More than you would think. More than you would think. That's for sure. And so, for me, like, looking at it from an outsider's perspective, it's like, San Diego. Why wouldn't he go to San Diego? You know, if you're deciding between if what Bryce Harper is after is long-term success, if these teams are offering them, you know, anywhere I've heard from 6 to 9 to 10 year $1 million, everyone's afraid of the Albert Pujols contract, right? From 10 years ago now, they're afraid of giving a star, you know, 10 years, $325 million. But Bryce Harper is 25 years old. It's Pujols was 30, 31 at that time, maybe a little bit older, and he had his best years behind him at that point. Bryce Harper has already been an MVP. He's already, you know, resurrected a franchise. The Nationals were nothing before Bryce Harper showed up. And now you look at it from Bryce's perspective, he goes, huh, this is a team who's willing to win, who has taken the proper steps to become to be a winning team. They've kind of torn down their organization and built it back up, and they have prospects literally everywhere. They're breathing prospects in San Diego at the moment. They have the best farm system in baseball, and if you look at the last 6 World Series champions, how did they win? By building to the draft, by building prospects, and then when the time's right, pouncing on that one free agent that gets them over the hump. I'm not saying, you know, they sign Bryce tomorrow and the Padres are favorites, but it's sure damn, you're sure damn a lot closer to winning a World Series if you got Bryce Harper on your team than if you don't.
So, interesting enough, you know, you mentioned the White Sox and the blank check, right, that these guys are just going to want these huge numbers. And I have to look up where I saw it, and I don't want to misquote the statistic, but if, you know, someone took a hunch at what these two might get paid, and if the Padres were to sign both of them, they would still be somewhere around 11th highest payroll in the MLB. That's how low their payroll is right now.
Oh, my God. That's insane.
So these guys, they have a lot of room. I mean, there are so many things going for them right now. The weather, the food, the women, the farm system, the beautiful stadium. That they
the women. Yeah, the women. Aren't they both married? Hold on. The women? They're both.
I thought it was just assumed that, like, you know, A-list celebrity athletes kind of got to free roam in a G-rated way of saying it, I guess. They live different lifestyles than we do, Uncle Luke.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, they're not living like us. So, either way, these guys have a lot going for them right now. I think we may have had this discussion, but Machado in the last year, he's got kind of a bad rap, it seems like, in terms of his attitude. The departure from Baltimore was kind of suspect. And then his time in L.A., there were a couple interesting plays that people just kind of started to turn on him. It seemed, oh, he got too flashy.
Yeah,
he was so Hollywood.
Stepping on first baseman and he was running out
exactly.
of downfall. But things like that.
Exactly. So the ref has been a little bit on the line. I think if he goes to San Diego, the scene would just mellow him out completely. In terms, I mean, at least in comparison with Los Angeles, it's so hard to be angry in San Diego. Honestly, it is so hard to be angry.
I can attest. Absolutely.
If if they do move forward, and hypothetically they are able to get Harper, and we're just playing what-if games because
right.
I've covered the Padres now. That's like my third year in a row. So at some point, I've just got to make something out of nothing. But if they do get Harper, you would have to imagine that Will Myers is on his way out and that they look at a free agent pitcher in the next 2 years, and then you hopefully just overlap the growth of your prospects with a mature group of solidified stars.
I would agree. But if he commits to San Diego, he knows what he's in for. He knows he's not going to contend, you know, right away.
It won't happen this year. It's not happening correct. This year.
And so that's why I think the him signing a long-term deal in San Diego is far more likely than in Philadelphia. You know, I personally don't think he's going to the White Sox. I think Manny Machado has eons more, I don't know what the word is, but there's a lot, it's a lot more likely for me to see Manny Machado in on the south side of Chicago than I do in San Diego. But Bryce, man, it almost like when I heard it, when I saw it this morning, I was like, yeah, that really just makes sense. Who's your right fielder right now? It's Will Myers, isn't it? Or does he still play first?
Well, Myers kind of got moved to the outfield when they signed Hosmer last year.
Right.
So, they had a complete mismatch group of guys last year. They have a guy named Franchi Cordero, who's kind of like up and coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they have Manny Margot is also the other young gun that they're putting in the outfield.
The center.
Yep. And then Hunter Renfroe is the long ball hitter that strikes out a lot in our outfield.
Yes. So he fits in perfectly in that organization and kind of becomes the unsung leader, him and Hosmer, as the guys who are going to kind of bring these new faces, new prospects in. This talented group of San Diego Padres prospects. And from then on out, it's playing the pitcher game of trying to find the next arm to get off the waiver wire and you know, just trying to – don't you guys have a pitcher in the prospects right now?
So our first round – our last two first-round draft picks, a kid named Ryan Weathers, who's a lefty pitcher who we drafted this year. And then last year our pick was a kid named Mackenzie Gore, who was the Gatorade National Player of the Year. He's a lefty, throwing like 94, 95 as an 18-year-old, bro.
I remember, yeah. He's probably 3-4 years away, but that's okay. If Bryce commits to San Diego, he's committing to the 2020s, basically, in San Diego, which, you know, if you had to ask me, hey, Luke, would you like to commit to the 2020s in San Diego? I'd be like, where's my flight? You know what I mean? Like, I would love nothing more to play baseball because I've been to Petco and you and I have made our – me specifically having been from Chicago and freezing my ass off this past week. I thoroughly enjoy San Diego. And if you told me, Luke, you want to play baseball in San Diego, just tell me where the dotted line is. And so I think this meeting has true – has this meeting has true meaning. I think they're not going
there's
into it.
There's merit to it.
Yeah, there is no – they're not just gauging each other's interest. It's, I think the Padres are going to them and saying, like, hey, we want you here. You know, here's our first number. You know, it's workable. We have a ton of money to, you know, to spend. And I don't know, you know, what the Padres' owning situation is if he's ready to start paying for an owner. But Bryce Harper gets people in the seats. And for a town, for a city that lost their football team, I think people are kind of craving some Padres baseball to be relevant again.
So I'm going to give two things and then we'll move on here. Okay.
Okay.
First thing, this is what I got a word from Sleeter. Okay. Me and Sleeter have been in some heavy discussions over the last couple of days about Padre baseball. And he was kind of explaining to me that although there may be interest between the two in these meetings, those two sides having a meeting provides leverage to both sides. So for Bryce Harper to have this meeting with the Padres, it gives him leverage with the Phillies and the White Sox, the Cubs and the Dodgers, saying, all right, well, you know, I have this opportunity on the table regardless. And the same thing kind of goes for the Padres with Manny Machado. They say, you know, Manny, like, we got Bryce Harper also we're talking with here. So if we want to – we're trying to make moves. So Peter was kind of making that point. And then the other thing that I wanted to say for the Padres was that neither of these two guys are going to be the clubhouse leader. That is Eric Hosmer's role the whole way. He's been to the World Series. He's got the World Series ring in his back pocket. He's been around an MLB clubhouse, and he's level-headed. Will Myers was never that guy for this team. It was Eric Hosmer the whole year. That's going to remain if Machado comes. That's going to remain if Harper comes. So no matter what happens, Hosmer is the clubhouse leader. And I think that's kind of a luxury for those two guys saying, you know what, it'll be kind of nice just to have to go out there and play ball. I don't have to worry about necessarily taking care of the kid. So those are the last two things I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think, you know, Bryce Harper offers a face for you know, a dormant, I hate to call it dormant, but it's a franchise that hasn't been relevant in the past few years. And to get someone like Bryce Harper in there who, like you said, he doesn't have to be the leader in the clubhouse per se on a day-to-day basis. It's Bryce Harper, though. He's going to be a leader regardless. But, I mean, good Lord, if I have a strong feeling that if in 2023 you're looking back on the year 2019 and you're saying, gosh, that winter we got Bryce Harper kind of just fell into our laps, and now Fernando Tatis Jr. is commanding the left side of the infield, and Mackenzie
I'm sorry. Hold on. I don't call him by his legal name.
Okay.
I refer to him as the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Okay. I should have known. After how many tweets I've seen about that kid for some rogue camera like GoPro in the Dominican of him just bat flipping, hitting 450-foot line drive, I should have known. But, I mean, if you look back on it, it's hard for me not for the Padres to think that the Padres are going into this meeting being extremely aggressive.
Beautiful. All right, so I'm glad we were able to get that down. Now, unfortunately here, Uncle Luke, we're going to have to turn our attention to some more negative news, okay? And, you know, not that Mizzou sports is necessarily the focus of, you know, what we do, but, oh, man, what a tough day. So Mizzou gets a postseason ban in football and softball because a tutor
– And baseball
because a tutor from 3 to 4 years ago was helping athletes pass classes.
Yeah.
I think your opinion is going to be a little more vocal and a little more interested than mine. So I want you to let it fly here first.
Okay. So just to break it down real quick, it's 3 years of probation on the university. The 2018-2019, so this baseball season and softball season both get hit with the postseason ban. Obviously, as everyone knows, the 2019-2020 postseason, which is next year, football season, they will get banned. A $5,000 fine plus 1% of football, baseball, and softball budgets, which if you look at it from a 1% perspective of football, it's like, oh, okay. But baseball and softball, it's a little bit of, that's a cold, hard chunk of cash that those budgets need. And then a reduction in scholarships and a 7-week ban on unofficial visit periods and recruit communications. To go into why is basically in 2016 there was an allegation that a rogue tutor was helping 12 student-athletes pass classes. In the investigations, the NCAA went out of their way to say that Mizzou has told us, and from our findings, that this tutor acted alone, that what he or she did. So we have a strong belief of who this person is, and she's actually tweeting about it as we speak right now. But
is it Yolanda?
Yolanda Kumar is how I think you pronounce the last name. Kumar, K-U-M-A-R. If you want to look up her Twitter right now and what she's been tweeting, it's pretty interesting. But the NCAA said that she acted alone. So at that glance, you're like, oh, okay, well, if no Missouri – if the athletics department or if the university didn't say complete these classes for these kids, then what is the university at fault for? Well, what the NCAA said was that you still employed her, that you still issued her to these student-athletes. So that's what they got nailed for. So on the surface, you look at it and you go, okay, your typical apps student athletes cheating on exams or using a tutor to complete their coursework, yada, yada, yada. We've seen this act before. Here's where I get extremely annoyed and pissed off. It's often when you look at NCAA allegations and cases like this of cheating, of whatever. On the surface, it looks like a normal ban. And then you look, you start comparing the cases, and then all of a sudden, everything gets blown out of proportion. It's kind of like when Goodell gave Ray Rice 2-game suspension for the video of him beating his now wife in the elevator, and then a week later, Josh Gordon smokes a little bit of pot and gets 4 games. And you're like, whoa. And then the NFL comes out and says, well, these cases are not held in the same standard. And I sit here and I'm like, excuse me? The University of North Carolina just went through a whole trial and investigation, and they created coursework for athletes across all sports. They created a phony coursework so that their student athletes could pass this fake class. They ordered a university employee to pass them in this fake class. It was a whole ordeal. It was systemic. And they got off scot-free. This happens to Mizzou, and it feels like Mizzou's getting the payback for what the NCAA didn't do to North Carolina. If you want to go even further, the University of Michigan State, or excuse me, Michigan State University, under their watch, had a university doctor sexually assault 160-plus women. 160-plus women. Not a single violation, not a single penalization from the NCAA. What is their moral compass? What are we doing here? If for 12 student athletes, Mizzou got caught for 12 student athletes, and this is what we get, while those schools get off scot-free from having massive systemic violations, and then Michigan State, I'm still appalled by that. Still appalled by that, how they get off scot-free. You know, people tell me, oh, Luke, well, people lost their jobs. Well, damn, they should have lost their jobs. They allowed a university doctor to sexually abuse 160-plus students. Don't give me that shit.
So, Uncle Luke, you're furious, you're upset, and I understand that. And I'm frustrated by the inconsistency of the NCAA. I think that's probably my main reaction.
Is
frustration, curiosity, and confusion. I will say, and I kind of wanted to tie this. This was kind of like my overarching theme for, I guess, this entire conversation we're having. Because just, you know, news comes out of nowhere. There is always information that the general public is not aware about.
Correct.
So there's a very good chance that the NCAA is acting upon something that we are not aware of yet. There is a possibility that Bryce Harper and the Padres are acting upon something that we do not know yet. There is a possibility, and we're going to get into it, that the Knicks, Kristaps Porzingis, the Dallas Mavericks, know something that we, the general public, do not know. And so I always think it's important, you know, digest the information. Let it simmer. Let's find out all the details. Because it seems like we – at times, obviously, you know, with social media, I see the tweet about a Mizzou ban, and all I want to say is, fuck the NCAA. But,
right.
Like, as it's my job, not necessarily, I don't want to say as a journalist, but, it, you know, it's important. So let's get our information here, because I don't want to consider myself Big J, okay? I'm no Big J guy here.
What kind of bothers me, sorry to cut you off there, but what kind of bothers me is I remember in 2016 when this first surfaced, that at Mizzou was having athletes under a certain tutor. The tutor was taking classes for them, this and that, and the University of Missouri would go under a certain protocol from the NCAA. And so I remember that. I was like, oh, okay, so we probably did something wrong, which, you know, as a Mizzou student, a Mizzou fan, you can only be like, oh, okay, what are the punishments, right? And in 2016, nothing was going for us. Our basketball team stunk. Our football team was in the midst of mutiny at that point. And so it was kind of like, oh, shucks, oh, well, who cares about it? And I remember seeing all over the internet, social media, that the minimum maximum sentence was going to be around scholarship loss, a fine, maybe stripped away wins or records from a certain season or something like that. Nowhere near a postseason ban.
It feels odd that they're punishing a majority of kids who had nothing to do with this.
Yeah. If you actually look at Kumar's Twitter handle, and she's tweeting it out because she wanted to get off her chest, which I'm sure her lawyer's probably not wanting that to be the case at the moment. But she did say that Maddie Mock was one of the students that she took a class for. Now, at the time thereafter, Maddie Mock got caught for snorting a certain substance on a video and was later so like those things kind of bang bang happened at once, but we obviously didn't know about Maddie Mock was a part of this until I guess today, at least for me. But for me, it's just the precedent on which the NCAA truly is trying to figure out how to penalize people. It's impossible not to look at other cases that have far more significance than this, and those universities got off scot-free. It's the fact that the University of Missouri was applauded by the NCAA for their cooperation, for their thorough investigation of themselves. You know, before the NCAA came in and did their investigation, Missouri did their own investigation, as most schools do under these types of instances. And for the NCAA to openly admit and be like, the University of Missouri has cooperated with us, they have told us the truth, they have shown us all the evidence, they have held nothing back, and yet this happens. And you look at the North Carolina case, where they literally closed their doors to the NCAA saying, we'll do our own investigation, you guys do not need to be in here, we will self, you know, impose sanction on us, and it worked. They lied about things. They got away with it, and no sanctions happened. So what are you supposed to do if the NCAA comes knocking on the door if they hear something under the rug? You know what I mean? Are you supposed to lie?
Yeah.
Or tell us, what does the NCAA want to be? You know, it felt like with the Nassar stuff, and I hate to use his name, but it felt like with the Michigan State stuff, they were just ready to get it over with. God, this is a bad look for our school after one of our main universities in the Big Ten, especially what happened after Penn State. And so they swept it under the rug. People got fired. Nassar's in jail. Okay, no more sanctions on Michigan State, so that broadcast during the football season don't have to bring up, oh, by the way, Michigan State doesn't have to play football or can't play football in the Big Ten Championship if they're good enough this year. And
next year for Mizzou, who is supposed to have, you know, a very promising season, every game will be masked, covered, and undermined by the fact that they won't be able to complete in the playoff next year.
Correct. And that is the number one underlying point, that those playoff postseason, if you know, baseball gets to the tournament, you're making money getting in the tournament. Softball, same thing. Football, massive amounts of money if you get to the SEC championship game. Massive amounts of money if you get to a New Year's Six game. And, you know, we're not going to sit here and talk about whether Mizzou can get there or not, but it's the very fact that the NCAA punishes us for something which seems so minuscule in the grand scheme of things that they have covered, and the investigations that have happened over the past 3 years. The basketball, the ongoing basketball investigation. Where are those sanctions going? You know, what if North Carolina gets under this again? Do they get off free again? It feels like Missouri, the lower level school that, you know, when a student athlete like Kelly Bryant comes to Mizzou from Clemson, a promising football year, it's like, well, we're going to have to penalize somebody. So let's penalize Missouri because, you know, they're not going to bring in the same sort of money and revenue that Ohio State would if we had to penalize them. So, I don't know. It really is a bad day. But at least they're going to fight it. At least we're going to court as from the Social Network. I saw that gift that you tweeted at me.
Lawyer up, Hassel, because I'm not coming back for 33%. I'm coming back for everything. Seriously, though, I don't know what the appeal process is like. I have no idea how long it takes, the probability of getting it removed and or diminished. But I'm happy that we have this documented. I think we both have relatively, like, fair, balanced, level-headed responses to, you know, the information that we got today. Maybe more information will be released over the next week.
But you know, it's good to document all this and share our thoughts because, man, from when I stepped on to the Mizzou campus when I was 18 years old 4 years ago, dude, a lot of crazy shit has gone down in this athletic department, man. A lot of crazy shit has happened.
It's ridiculous that, you know, this was like on the back burner, that everyone completely forgot about this from 2016 because everything that's happened in the past 6 months, you know, regardless of on the field, off the field, just in the last 6 months, it feels like I've aged 15 years. And we're talking about a four-year span, which, I mean, I don't think any athletic department has seen as much turbulence and volatility as the Missouri athletic department. And today is just a tough day. At least, you know, the internet gods are on our side. And from what I saw across the board is that no one was saying, oh, you know, Missouri deserved this. You know, they did it. Now, we'll see what happens with Yolanda Kumar, whether she is a test process or if we're going to do another
or if there's a hit put out on her. I don't know.
This is SEC football now.
I was just going to say she might get the whack. You know what I mean? Better way, she should watch her back. This is good to have documented.
Yeah.
And this is good to have documented.
Continue.
Yes, it will continue. But it's good to have this documented. I'm glad we were able to get that off our chest. Other news, though, that happened today, and, you know, the internet remains undefeated, Uncle Luke. So having them on our side in today's little scuffle with the NCAA was nice. But among the internet content that rolled through today, and this happened the latest of all the news, but at around 3 o'clock today, in a matter of 4 minutes, it went from Kristaps Porzingis is unhappy with the direction of the Knicks to 5 minutes later, Kristaps Porzingis wants out of New York to 5 minutes later, Kristaps Porzingis is looking at Brooklyn, Miami, Dallas, Phoenix to 5 minutes later, holy shit, we have Dirk and Nash 2.0 in Dallas. Luka is being joined by Kristaps Porzingis, the Latvian Zinger.
You went through that timeline perfectly. It really came out as the Knicks are having a meeting today with Kristaps Porzingis because he's a little worried about the direction of this franchise. They're 10-40 right now. You know, they're losing games on. I don't want to say they're losing games on purpose, but they're trying to get a top pick in the next upcoming draft, possibly get Zion. I think they're in the one spot right now. And in like a matter of 15 minutes, it was like, wow, we have Doncic and Porzingis on the same team. How did that happen? I mean, you have to applaud on every level the job that the front office, ownership, coaching of the Dallas Mavericks has done in the last 9 months now. I mean, they went from DSJ, you know, when they drafted Dennis Smith Jr., it was like, all right, here it is. This is the end of the Dirk era. We're gonna move into a new year of Mavericks basketball. You know, the Mavericks had Terry, Sean Merriman, like that whole generation of the players are now retiring or are retired. And so it was like, okay, the Mavs have now joined the pool as one of the tanking teams of the NBA to try and get back into playoff form. And if you want to compare the Mavs to the rest of the tanking teams, I mean, in a 9 month span, they went from getting the fifth pick in the draft to trading up to three, getting the rookie of the year, should have been if it wasn't a loaded West, probably an All Star in the East, Luka Doncic, who has wowed everybody, who has been a sensation, all the superlatives you can imagine, to finding what seems to be his running mate, his European running mate for the next 10 years if he stays with them. And it's all under the guy who really set the precedent for Euros being very good in the NBA, and Dirk Nowitzki, who can guide them to a clear path in the future. I mean, I just have to applaud Mark Cuban, Rick Carlisle, and whoever the hell runs the front office for the Dallas Mavericks, because today they came out winners. You know, they sent a bunch. They sent DSJ, DeAndre Jordan, who's a good friend of KD, keep in mind, to New York.
Oh, is he? Is DeAndre Jordan a good friend of Kevin Durant? It makes the New York move a little more interesting. So with this, you know, all the movement, and I want to stick to that theme that I mentioned earlier, that the general public does not have all the information. I want to stick to that theme. Because there is stuff going on behind closed doors that we have no idea about. For the Mavericks, it's a very small risk in reality, right? 9 months ago, you were at the bottom of the rebuild, as you very well said. And here you are with the chance to have your Batman and Robin duo of the next 10, 12 years. If you're the Knicks, it's low risk. The guy wanted out. At some point, when a player wants out of your franchise, they kind of get to do what they want. Like, if he wants to leave, he kind of gets to leave. So the Knicks were like, all right, well, shit, now we have to do something. It was a pretty slick move on their end to get the good friend of Kevin Durant. You get a serviceable center in DeAndre Jordan. You get a very high draft pick of recent years in Dennis Smith Jr., and then you
who
get
just had a
Lee as well.
In the garden.
Funny enough you say that. So it makes sense for both sides. I get what both sides are doing. I do not understand Kristaps Porzingis. That one needs to be explained to me, his thought process. Because you are a half season away from potentially landing a number one overall draft pick and Kevin Durant, and you assume that if you get those two things, you could get a nice other puzzle piece to add on. So what are you doing wanting to leave the best basketball city in the country, probably the most loyal fan base in the country, you know, arguable with the Boston Celtics and the Chicago Bulls, and you have a very high level of interest with Kevin Durant? I don't get what he wants to do. Then he says, oh, after this year, I'm thinking about signing what's called the qualifying offer, which would be $4.5 million to play one more year while he's still under contract with the Knicks. You're coming off of a knee injury, an ACL injury, and you're 7'3". It would seem that you would want that bag of dough, would you not? Like, I just don't get what Kevin Durant or what Kristaps Porzingis is trying to do. That's the only thing that is the question mark in all this for me. I don't understand what he is doing.
So let me break that down, because those are all really good points. And I actually have I don't want to call it a rebuttal, but I agree on most of those points. I you know, if you look at it on the surface, you're like, Stops has no, like, what is he doing? You know, he wants to leave New York when it looks like the good days of the New York Knicks franchise are on the way. And like, and if you want to keep to the theme, I mean, let's start there. There's obviously that Kristaps Porzingis was unhappy with somebody, someone, something in the New York Knicks organization. Because if you think about it, they brought his like coach or trainer or somebody over from Latvia that he grew up with to kind of like make amends after they fired Hornacek and then they hired Fizdale. You remember that in the off season in the summer? It was like, oh, Fizdale and Porzingis met, try to get on the same ground. So it was always kind of a rocky relationship ever since he tore his ACL. Like, he didn't get it done. He didn't get it done by the team surgeon or anything, you know? So it was obvious that he just flat out didn't trust the Knicks. And if you're gonna look at it from a pessimist point of view as a Knicks fan or as a human being, the Knicks, look what they did to Carmelo Anthony, you know? The way he left. The way that...
Oh, whoa, hold on, pause. We're not going to do this conversation now, but we have a stern discussion coming up in one of the next few episodes of this podcast, brother.
Okay.
We have a very, very stern discussion that needs to be had.
Right. I agree. But at surface level, you ask, what is he doing? And then you look at it and you go, the Knicks have won less than 30 games the last 5 years, and they've been trying to rebuild for the last 5 years. Since they drafted him, they've been in rebuild mode, and they have failed on rebuilding. And now it seems, as you said, it seems like they were headed in the right direction. They clear up cap space. They got enough for Durant with Porzingis. If he signs a qualifying offer, he was a restricted free agent coming in this year. You know, he's probably going to get 4 years, $100 million, kind of like Giannis did after his third or fourth
rookie
year there.
Deal.
Right. Instead, he just wanted out. He didn't trust the Knicks. And to be honest with you, sitting from the comfort of my own home and just kind of looking at it, it's like, why wouldn't you trust the New York Knicks? Why wouldn't Lauri Markkanen trust the Chicago Bulls? What have these what has the New York Knicks organization proven to Kristaps Porzingis that we are headed in a different direction, that this isn't like the last 5 years, that this isn't the last 25 years? The Knicks haven't won a championship since 1973. Phil Jackson was playing in those years. You know, what is that proven to Kristaps? And so credit the Knicks. The Knicks were like, he doesn't want to be here. We tried. We set up a meeting. It seemed like it was going to go okay. It didn't. It's obvious to us that he doesn't trust us, and we got to get him while we can. Because in free agency, you know, the Knicks could have offered, matched, or they could have let him walk, and they would have not gotten two first-round picks. Dennis Smith Jr., DeAndre Jordan, who is Katie's good friend. Wes Matthews is probably going to be bought out. But they got players. And then what they also did is they offloaded a ton of cap space, $75 million in cap space this upcoming offseason, and there are superstars abundant. And that is their plan, and that's what it looks like. At the end of the day,
I mean, they're rolling the dice.
Fan, I would be devastated. This was the Latvian game banger that was going to save your franchise.
Oh, that's funny. No, that's really well said, Uncle Luke. And, like, they are. They're taking a small risk, getting rid of, you know, Porzingis, but opening up two max spots is not a bad idea. Uncle Luke, as we're having this discussion, I have TNT on my top screen right now, and the Bucks just got done laying a beatdown in Toronto.
That, you know, gives how much them the Giannis three, had?
19-9.
Ah, fuck. All right.
Did he take the over?
I took the over on his points, yeah.
Yeah. It's been a rough Sorry, night. Buddy.
Yeah.
Well, so Bledsoe did not get selected for the All-Star game. And so he came out with anger, vengeance, and a bit of intensity tonight in Toronto. But they also got the win tonight, gave them a 3-1 series victory over Toronto. So if by chance they end up needing a tiebreaker later on for home court advantage, they would get that. Dude, the Bucks look so good right now. They're 24 games over 500. It's unbelievable to watch. Literally unbelievable. I don't even believe my eyes when I'm watching
this game. They play a beautiful brand of basketball. They spread it out. They have a guy who cannot be stopped once he gets past the first line of defense. You know, like the way that offense works, I feel like 35% of Milwaukee's plays, if Giannis brings it up, and you have to put someone over 6'7 on him, or he's just going to bully you. They bring it up. Everyone is so spread out over the floor. If Giannis gets past that first line of defense, there's got to be help. And that help's probably going to be dunked on if they try to meet him at the rim. If not, Giannis is a freaking point guard, so he can pass it out to Brook Lopez, who's having the best shooting season of his life. Eric Bledsoe.
Okay, serious question. Is Brook Lopez the best signing of this offseason? I'm not saying biggest, because obviously it's LeBron. But is Brook Lopez the best signing of this NBA offseason?
Well, you know, a lot of people like to put biggest and best in the same category. But in terms of wins and losses, no team is going to go from what the Bucks did, the 8 seed to the 1 seed, without, you know, a significant signing. To me, I think the biggest signing or best signing is Mike Budenholzer, without a doubt. I have no idea why Atlanta decided to let Bud go, especially when they brought in a point guard that seems like Bud would – you know, turn into an absolute sensation. And you would think that maybe Atlanta holds their cards and just takes Doncic instead of trading that pick away if they were under the control of Mike Budenholzer. But, I mean, you know, another franchise where you're kind of like, well, what are you doing? Why are you letting Budenholzer go, the guy who brought you 62 wins 4 or 5 years ago? In a 1 seed with Paul Millsap, Jeff Teague, Kyle Korver, and Kent Bazemore. You know, whatever
they have, like three All Stars in that. They have three All Stars on that team.
They had four All Stars. They had 1 week where all five players were the players of the week. They just named their entire team. That team was incredible to watch, and they remind me so much of that team. The only difference is there's a generational talent in Milwaukee. There wasn't in Atlanta. Atlanta got to the conference finals and lost to LeBron James. There's no LeBron in the East anymore. If Kawhi's Toronto Raptors one of the top dogs in the East that are going to be in front of the Bucks. As a Bucks fan, you got to be looking at it like this: we went 3-1 against that team. the best team that matches up against the Bucks is still the Celtics, and there's going to be plenty of bad blood from the best series of the playoffs last year. If so,
man,
they
oh, man.
The playoffs. And then there's the Sixers. If you're a Bucks fan, all three of those teams, the Raptors, the Bucks, or the Raptors, the Sixers, and the Celtics, have all had their difficulties this year. It's been smooth sailing since day one for the Bucks. And that chemistry, we always talk about the Bill Simmons, the secret, when a team just has that it factor about it, that sometimes they're unexplainable. When the smaller players are playing their best basketball.
It's like the combination of, like, the hard work resulting in success and having
correct.
Fun in the process. Like, a lot of the secret is having fun. That is one of the main ingredients to a successful long season in the NBA is blatantly just having fun. And the
really
Bucks are doing a whole lot of that right now.
What is a better sign as a Milwaukee Bucks fan is that they went in Toronto and demolished them. They're going on the road and just absolutely pummeling teams. They're not only beating the teams that they should beat, they're destroying them. They're covering games. They're a great team. And the second half of the season, Bo, you got to start believing. Because that one team's going to look nicer and nicer. You know the Warriors may lay off in the second half.
I don't want to get greedy. I don't want to get greedy right now. I'm getting nervous. It's like, is this real? I can't even believe it's happening. All right, Uncle Luke, the last thing worth mentioning is the return of LeBron James tonight. So we'll see how he looks. I don't know what kind of minutes he's going to play. I don't know what the plan is at all, but just kind of fun. Hopefully, you know, he looks healthy and all that jazz because, I mean, the NBA is just better when he's there. I don't think that's really too disputable. And then the other thing I wanted to tell you, Uncle Luke, good friend of the show, Mizzou representative, member of the Mizzou Mafia, Alec Lewis was on Paul Feinbaum today.
Yes, I know. I was listening to him, and that was so cool. Or just
good
it's
for
just
the
so
kid.
Cool. Yeah,
good
you
for
know,
the
like,
kid.
He deserves that radio hit for one. Absolutely deserves it. But two, I mean, just to go on Feinbaum, a national audience, no matter what, somebody's listening. I know the byline says The Athletic, but somebody is listening, and they're hearing Al Lewis, and they're thinking, huh, look him up, read his stuff. I mean, that's how you get noticed. One of the best people in the business, for sure.
Good dude, good work ethic, doing all the right things. I mean, just rooting for him to succeed. He's just one of the guys you want to do well and super fun
like the
to watch him
work. The moment you meet him, yeah. I would love to hear his takes on today's NBA, too. And he was an NBA guy. He's covering college football in the Mizzou sporting spectrum. But he's an NBA guy at heart, so we got to love him.
Yeah, he is. Alabama Al doing his thing. God, I love it. I don't
Alabama.
Know if I love him more or his Alabama accent because I love both of them a whole lot.
Or his Derek Dooley impersonation.
Oh, my God, the Derek Dooley impression is incredible. It's stuff made of Morgan Freeman's voice.
It is really good. Hey, should we drop the new – are we allowed to? The new
– I don't know. I can't get in trouble. I don't know if Hags is going to get pissed if I say something I'm not supposed to.
2019 is going to be a good year, that's for sure.
God, am I amped for it. Uncle Luke, this was pretty smooth. This went rather swimmingly.
Yeah, an easy 50-minute call right here. I'm glad you called in. Emergency call to just get
to
it
do
all
it.
Off our chest because, my God,
had
what
to do
day.
It. All right, Uncle Luke, well, it's 9:38 here in Como, so everyone's waking up from their pregame nap. Downtown Columbia, Missouri. So I'm gonna go start to get my swerve on here, Uncle Luke. But good talking to you as always. Let's get this thing going again. Maybe we have our next discussion for the little All-Star break trade deadline recap. How's that sound?
I'm in. Let's
beautiful,
do it.
Beautiful. All right, Uncle Luke. One more thing. Let's go home, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go home.
Let's go home. Let's go home, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go home. Big make a clap to this.